Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
And the Israeli journalist that we chat to this afternoon about the latest developments in Israel today is Dr. Kanaan Lidor. Kanaan, shalom. Thanks for having you again with us on Chai FM this afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me over. It's always a pleasure.
Kanaan, I guess we have to start with the story making the headlines from yesterday already, and that is that the Israel Air Force has killed the Hezbollah military chief, apparently the number two, in the most aggressive strike since the 2024 ceasefire. Israel, a bit on Spilka's, waiting for a response, I believe.
Well, that remains to be seen, because this elimination, part of what this liquidation, what makes it unusual, is that it happened in the Dahya. So it didn't happen in the security buffer north of Israel's border, but rather in the heart of Beirut. And that hasn't happened in months that Israel struck there. And it also kind of stretches the Israeli claim that it's only observing the ceasefire, although the reason for the liquidation was that Tabatabi, the person who was eliminated, was actually planning attacks in the buffer zone, and so he was fair game. But at the end of the day, this is a signal to Hezbollah and to Lebanon that unless they fill the vacuum in southern Lebanon, which the Lebanese army was supposed to do under the ceasefire and has actually shown more willingness than before to do, unless they do that, then there will be actually no ceasefire. There will be a unilateral ceasefire, which means Israel will keep on striking in Lebanon at will, and any sort of offensive action by Hezbollah will be met by disproportionate retaliation.
Kanaan, are we witnessing a new Israel, a new post-October the 7th Israel, where the old rules just can't apply anymore, because we know where this leads?
Maybe, partly. The reason that Israel can do this is that it has a free hand from Trump, and mostly that Hezbollah is powerless. So its threats, just 3 weeks ago, Naim Qassem, the sort of replacement of Nasrallah, threatened that this cannot go on any further, we will not tolerate, etc., etc. Well, if you don't have a ballistic arsenal, then you will tolerate, because you absolutely have no options to act offensively. And this is what we're seeing. The Middle East is about brute force and ability, and Hezbollah lacks both right now.
Okay, so I've just happened to have the Times of Israel open in front of me, and I'm quoting, "The Zionists should be very, very worried." That apparently said at his funeral today. Puffery, I'm presuming. Big words, unable to carry out on the threats, I'm hoping.
Right now, Simon. But of course, Hezbollah and Iran, it's often said with reason that they operate on a different time scale than the Western immediate one. They operate, when we think about years, they think about decades as the basic unit for measuring geopolitical processes. So when they say it, they mean it. A response is coming. Iran is rebuilding. We are rearming, and you will pay, but that doesn't apply to the immediate term.
Let's move on to another issue then. It was really interesting to me that last night, watching Israeli Channel 12 News, the main story was Zamir's action against certain Israeli officers, what's the word I'm looking for? Not come up. It's not justice. Probably justice post October the 7th. It's really interesting that it's kind of fallen off all the pages of the newspaper today. Is this not a big deal in Israel, or is it, and just that there's more important news?
This is a very big deal because of restoring confidence in the military. And part of the reason that it's a big deal is the identity of the people being handed personal recommendations, meaning demotions and other forms of rebuke. Look at, for example, Shlomi Binder. He is today the head of the intelligence, but on October 7th, he was the head of the operations division. And so what this means is that until now, 2 years after October 7th, the IDF has not yet really cleaned the stables. The same people that were in very prominent roles during October 7th are still occupying very prominent roles now. So this is the first time that we're seeing a willingness to address this. This is a people's army. This is our army. This is our survival, the key to our survival. And it's the first time that we've seen this kind of action. For example, Haron Khalifa, the head of the intelligence, he retired after October 7th, but that's not good enough for the chief of staff. Eyal Zamir is actually going after Khalifa in this report and probably demoting him, definitely putting a stain on his record. And now this brings another discussion that's taking place right now, which is, okay, you've dealt with the army, but the army is, of course, taking orders from the political leadership, and we have the same prime minister, many of the same ministers, the same National Security Council. So what about that? And that's maybe the reason that it's such big news, because it goes to the core of the demand of so many Israelis for real change in leadership after October 7th.
That's just interesting, because I hadn't made the connection between the commission of inquiry, the debate within Israel as to what that commission is going to look like, as opposed to what the army is doing. But maybe there is a closer connection than there appears at first sight.
Right. And there is no confidence in that committee of inquiry. There was no confidence, at least until now, in what the army was releasing report after report. But what good are the reports if the same officers have been just shuffled around? And this is the first time that we've seen an attempt to break that circle.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move on to another story-making news. X has a new feature. It's a location feature. Apparently it reveals the origins, the geographic origins of certain anti-Israel and anti-Semitic websites. What's the significance of that?
It's a double-edged sword, Simon, because just as we have discovered that people like, say, Mutassem Adalul, who is a Gaza reporter, that's how the BBC described him anyway, quoting from him, is actually based in Poland, according to this new feature of the X, which reveals where the account is based. But since then, Bill Ackman, a big conservative figure, went ahead and said, you know, this man is a fraud and the BBC should distance itself from his reporting. And BBC has done this. It kind of removed some articles and some references to him. But then Mutassem Adalul actually uploaded a video of himself in Gaza, and you can see him walking around the bombed out building. So it's not 100%. It's not a clear cut conviction. And still the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it used this. It said in a tweet that Mutassem's reporting is not to be trusted because he's actually in Poland. It's another weapon being lobbed around in the Hasbara information wars, but it's far from conclusive. And I don't know if you have looked yourself up already, Simon. I did. I'm good. I'm in Israel, so that's a relief.
Okay, well, it's glad to hear at least I get something right. Another story, and again, I don't, the context will be interesting. UK police apparently used false claims about Israeli fans to justify a soccer game ban. What's the backstory here?
So earlier this month, the Midlands Police in the northern UK was desperately looking for an excuse to keep out Maccabi in a match against Villa, against a local team. And what they came up with was the reports, the disputed reports of what happened in Amsterdam a year ago when Maccabi fans were assaulted. And they selectively used all kinds of quotes from reports saying that the Maccabi fans instigated it. That's the proof they needed to show to the municipality, to the courts when it was challenged, this ban on Maccabi fans. So no, we're keeping public order. We need to look, there's credible proof here that these Maccabi fans are hooligans and we need to protect the public. Point, but of course, this is this lie has very short legs. Didn't run very far, because in the Netherlands, people who have been following this said this is a manipulation of the actual reports. What are you talking about? And the Times in London yesterday ran a big item that exposed this manipulation, and now it looks like the police knowingly used mendacious information in order to keep Israelis out. So I guess it's a mixed bag. It's good that it's exposed now, but if this is accepted practice, then this will just keep happening. And the reason that it was possible to do this is that the Amsterdam mayor also kind of changed her story midway, and now the official line is the Israelis instigated it. So basically it's an inversion. It's a total inversion of the truth. Very infuriating in a country where also yesterday anti-Israel demonstration happened in front of the St. John's Wood Synagogue in central London, maybe the most prominent London synagogue, Reform synagogue. The police said we have no provisions to prevent this. So my point is that it all fits into a bigger picture in which Jews and Israelis are it's open season on them, and you can protest at their houses of worship, and you can make up lies, and not just make up lies, but invert the truth in order to keep them out.
It's actually interesting, Kanan, because I had two stories open today. I didn't manage to get there. The one was exactly one that you touched on, the St. John's Wood, this demonstration outside the shul at St. John's Wood. And the other one was the demonstration outside the shul in Manhattan, where Mamdani was kind of intimating, well, if you're going to use a sacred space for a Aliyah event, then you are desecrating the space and you deserve it. I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty much what he said. And I thought there's a worrying trend that seems to be justifying demonstrations, anti-Israel demonstrations, outside places of worship.
This happened for the first time on a grand scale in 2014 outside the Synagogue de la Victoire in Paris. There was actually a riot. A mob arrived at the synagogue and started starting to make their way in. But some young people from the community just rushed to the defense of the synagogue. There was a scene of these, you know, typical cafe tables being thrown around violently in the center of Paris as the defenders are trying to keep out. And this was seen as a shocking event that really jolted the French authorities into action and never again, right? Well, now it's apparent it's happened in Toronto, where there was a march on a heavily Jewish street, just a residential area, a clear attempt at intimidation. We saw it in northern London, where there was a procession, a caravan of cars with speakers and Palestinian flags. We saw it now in New York. We saw it yesterday at St. John's Wood. And this is becoming the new reality, not just for European Jews, but all over.
Our last story for the afternoon, I must say that is hugely concerning what you just said, but let's end on a more positive note. The Aliyah of the remaining members of the B'nai Menashe in India.
Right. By the end of next year, we'll have 1,200 more of the Bnei Menashe, who are an isolated community in northern India. They actually look Burmese, and they are one of those communities that have always kept Judaism, but were cut off from the main fold of Judaism. And in 2006 or seven, I'm not sure, but that's where the big breakthrough came, when there was recognition that they are actually real kosher Jews and they are entitled to make Aliyah. And since then, a few thousand have come, and now we'll see 1,200 more. And by the end of 2030, we'll have all of them back, not back, but over here, all of them home, rather, all the 4,600 remaining. And I actually have, you know, in my reporting here in Israel, I've come across them in the most challenging of environments, you know, in Sderot, in bombed out apartment houses, in Hebron, in the center of the of Kiryat Arba, you know, the Jewish enclave there, in the Golan, and everywhere I came, there was always this quiet resolution and determination to make it here, this quiet gratefulness, and they are just wonderful, a wonderful addition to Israeli society, and just great to finally know that all of them will come here. The problem is, if we, you know, we can't leave it on a total positive note. The problem is, and we've seen it with the Falashmura, is that many of these families are mixed. Even though they kept to Judaism, you know, halachically, they're still mixed. And all these proclamations of by this year, we'll bring over all the Falashmura or Bnei Menashe, they turn out to be much more messy on the ground in reality than they look on paper. So we'll have to see how this one shakes out, but it's good that we have thousands of them coming because they're a net positive to the society.
Dr. Knan Lidor, as always, thank you so much for your input this afternoon.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. See.com.